It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studio of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona. And in studio, we got the special guest for y'all because, we're done with a whole bunch of stuff. We're getting into real politic. We have the qualification for the primary ballot by turning in petitions. And so you don't really, in Arizona, now it doesn't really start. The signs don't really start getting saturated on every corner until after you have the ballot list done. You have a list of candidates. They turned in their petitions. They qualified. They checked them. They're going, okay, here is the race. Well, one of those races, a good friend of mine that lives in Sierra Vista, the southern part of Arizona, he was insisting, Ernie, you got to get Brian Miller on. You know, American conservative, American, okay? We're going to have, and we're going to talk all about him. You know, he's, I'm not even going to get into it. I'm going to let him do his spiel, okay? This is the thing. I hate politics. I hate it. I hate it so much, except for one thing. I get to make fun of it. You know, I'm just like, you know, here, so I know I do everything I can. I know Brian Miller's running. I know he's endorsed by Dr. Paul. I know he's running against, an evil Democrat down in, that district. So, I get all the stuff sent to me, and I look, I'm going, do I have to read it? I'd rather just talk to him. Okay, so he drove up from Tucson. He's in studio right now. Now, we're going to go ahead and get to him after this first break. Because on this, we have a short four-minute, segment getting an introduction. Let me tell you what I know. He's, getting a lot of street cred on Fox. You know, Judge Napolitano's talking to him. He's saying all the right stuff, and he's Purdy. Oh, yeah, you got to have Purdy young guys coming up. Now, we just had, day before yesterday, we had the primary in New Mexico for Adam Kokesh, and he got under 30%, going up against the traditional Republicans. And I tell you, the problem is that, R's, D's, when you get up to the level of going into the federal government and so on, you get high enough up on the pyramid, it's the same guys controlling both sides. I mean, they that's how it works. And coming in from the outside, I don't know, is it an endorsement from Dr. Paul, a kiss of death? You know, in what way? I know it's a big benefit of people wanting to come and help and spread the idea that we're a constitutional republic and let's go ahead and make it work. Can it? You know, how far, I mean, is it like, or do you just sit on the sidelines, eat peanuts and wait for it to all fall down, and then you go out on the clear field and start over? You know, how bad does it have to get before we just go, are we there yet? Can we leave? Can we hurry up and get to a police state so we can leave? Are we there? I don't know. These are the kind of things I want to talk about. We're gonna have an interesting conversation with a gentleman that's running against somebody that needs to be replaced, and against other Republicans that think they're the ones to replace him. And Dr. Paul gave him the nod. Good friends I know gave him the nod. They want him to come up on the show. He's sitting here right now. When we get back, that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk to Brian Miller. He's running the Arizona's 8th congressional district against. We'll find out when we get back. We're going to do it. I know as much as you do. On purpose. So we're going to go ahead and get into this when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and hopefully an independence declaring kind of guy, Brian Miller, the American conservative here in the 8th District in Arizona. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, some Led Zeppelin here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, you know, and it's all, you get your ear control with that knob right there. Yeah, you know, we have a request by Brian Miller to do some Led Zeppelin, so that gets him a couple of votes right there, okay? So we're good. Go ahead and pull your mic over.
All right.
Now, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to go ahead and allow him to introduce himself. He's going to tell you all about the race. He's going to tell you where he came from, why he's running, and what's so evil about his opponent. And I don't even know who it is. It's some woman down there that came in a couple of sessions ago, whatever, and now she quit it, and can I finish? I get it.
Doesn't really matter.
You know, so the thing is that we are in a gerrymandered state that gives pretty much guarantee a couple of Democratic congressional seats. You know, you have one that Ed Pastor up here in Central Phoenix, and it's, you know, all the minority and Hispanic community is like, boom. You know, we definitely not getting conservative Republicans out of this district. Well, they kind of do the same thing in area in the Tucson area. So he's coming after that one. Well, what's how are you going to get those Democrats coming over? Let me ask you these questions, see if you know this. How many what was the percentage of Republicans in the general election vote totals in the past elections?
Right now we got registered about slightly more Republicans at 32%.
Not registered, votes.
Votes. It actually fell pretty similar to that line. It was slightly less because of last year's dynamics, but it was around 30%.
Okay, so we got 30. So you got to make up another at least 20% more what you got, you know, for Republicans in the past. But 30% is a good base. And when you got things going into the crapper the way it is, you know, you get another 5-6% just from that.
Well, yeah, but it's also split almost three-way with the independents. It's almost three-way split.
Oh, there's an independent running in the – oh, you're talking about registration.
I'm talking about
split
three ways.
No, I understand. That's why I always ask about the vote totals in the general.
Right.
Because – I've been doing this a long time, man. I'm telling you, in 1992-94, I had done a lawsuit, 44 election laws I challenged all the way to the Ninth Circuit. During that process and discovery and all this kind of stuff, this one thing that a stat that came up that I found very interesting. You had back then only 14% of the people were registered as other than Republican or Democrat, but they made up 30% of the people that actually voted in the general election. Okay, now because of the way the laws have changed, and so a lot of people have left the parties, now independents are a larger block than Republicans or Democrats.
Right.
Then you have the libertarian influence in a lot of ways more than just totals. It's just influence. So there's the dynamic keeps changing. Mm-hmm. But in the general election, you know, the last time you're looking at, you know, the Democrat got, you know, 70, Republican 30. So if you're looking at this, I'm going, okay, Brian's going, I'm going to win.
Okay, I misunderstood your question. It wasn't 70-30.
Okay, what was it?
It was 56-44.
Okay, well, now we're close.
Yeah.
You know, so now we have a situation where we got a bad economy and all kinds of stuff, and I blame the incumbent. So,
Right. Heck,
you already won. So anyway,
well, gotta get to the primary.
All right, so now you got a primary challenge.
Yeah.
Who are we up against? Let's talk about the incumbent first. Go ahead and tell us about her.
She's right along the line with Pelosi and Obama and all that. Before 08, she probably had a valid claim to the title Blue Dog Democrat. She was relatively fiscally responsible, if you will. But since October 08, starting with TARP, she's been on board with the spending spree that's been on in Washington, and she's been loyal to it.
You know, the problem is that I don't see it. It was the Republicans that brought it back and passed TARP last time.
I know.
You know, we had it die. We were covering it closely here on the radio show and, you know, Freedom's Phoenix, and we're going, look, when they voted down the first time, the first thing that I said is, how long before you think they're going to quit, man. Play with the microphone. How long before you think they're going to bring it right back?
Right.
And who brought it back? John Shattuck.
Yep.
So what did we do? Hundreds of signs. National socialization of the economy isn't fascist, .. When I do it, John S.S. Shattuck, and I told him and his supporters and his staff and all these guys are trying to, well, Ernie, but we're going to, you know, go into the abyss of, and I go, good. You know, if you do this, I will make sure he gets a swastika tattooed on his butt and his shoot to the moon he thinks he's going to do, whatever it is. I guarantee he is done. So we dogged him like you wouldn't believe. He pulls out, okay? That is what's waiting anybody that would do, because all I ever hear, and this is a warning, man, I'm telling you, don't even start saying stuff like this. All I ever hear, but we got to get in. You can't do anything unless you win. You got to be in to affect you. You got to be in. You got to be in. I heard this from Shattuck. I heard it from J.D. Hayworth. I heard it from Trent Franks. I heard it from all these guys I know personally, okay? When Trent Franks first started running for Congress in 94, I sat at the head table. 700 people in there. You know, we were good friends with him at church. J.D. Hayworth went to church with him, too. These guys, my brother Ernie, my brother Sam, oh, we all buddies and everything. No, because let me tell you, we'll get in, and then we can fix it. So who was the deciding vote on the expansion of prescription? Trent Franks. You know, who's the one that keeps expanding all this kind of, you know, we got the National Socialization of the Economy, John Shattuck. You know, so this is, we get in for the important votes. For things like nationally socializing the entire economy, you need me in there to do the right thing. When you need prescriptions, voting on, you know, to do away with prescriptions, you need a good conservative Republican in there so that doesn't happen, Trent Franks. You get my drift?
Oh, I get it.
Just like, don't even start with me, all right? So, I already hate all politicians right off the bat.
Sure.
Before we even start.
Sure.
You're different because why?
Well, you got to recognize, if you hit it right in the head there, you got all these people that said, that are trying to now claim the movement, the leadership of this conservative resurgence based on liberty, based on individual freedom, based on getting the government out of our lives. But they're the same group of guys who voted for TARP. And the thing I always remind people, and I know I don't need to remind you and your audience, but TARP wasn't just about the spending. It was about the incredible transfer of power from the legislative branch to the executive branch. And there's no better indicator of living in a tyranny than when a single man or a single office owns the power to do, well, anything he wants, of course, take us to war, you know, do whatever he wants in the economy, buy whatever aspects of the economy he wants to. And so the TARP was twofold, not just the spending, but the control. I'm different because I actually believe this individual freedom stuff in limited government. I believe the philosophy that Jefferson pushed forward. I believe the philosophy of taking the government out, the morality of freedom, what comes from leaving people to decide their own lives, what the morality that comes from getting the government control regulation out of an economy so people can engage with each other, free commerce, free trade. You know, it's not just lip service. It's not just saying the right things on the campaign trail, unless you sit down and you've spent some time looking at the philosophy of our founders, the philosophy of individualism, then you probably don't understand it, and which is why we have people in government that vote when they get their arms twisted for stuff like TARP, that we're going to save capitalism by socialism. It doesn't make any sense. They don't understand. It's like the people that say we have to solve the border problem with enforcement only, or we have to engage people in foreign countries only with our military. And conservatives say this. It's disgusting because they don't understand freedom. They don't understand markets. They don't understand the power of dealing with someone through commerce.
Let me ask you this. You said limited government, okay? You know, whenever you use a limiter like that, you know, it's like we have limited government. Yeah, we want to rule you limitedly. but we intend to rule, okay? So I need to know, when you say limited, what does that mean? I ask you a simple question. What is the proper role of the federal government?
To protect life, liberty, and property.
And how's that working out?
We're well beyond the proper role, Ernie, as you know. I mean, think about it. What do we got? 15 departments in the federal bureaucracy? There should be 4: Treasury, Justice, Defense, and State.
And what should the State Department be doing? I mean, you were out there, you know, putting daisies in everybody's nuclear silo. I mean, what should we be doing? Well, I mean, weren't you military?
Yeah, I spent almost 11 years active duty as an A-10 fighter pilot. Now I'm in the reserve.
I know, A-10s are my favorite.
They're pretty cool.
Very cool, very cool. You know, the thing is, though, I'm going, you know, being in the military, were you deployed? Did you go to Iraq?
Yeah, I was in Afghanistan.
Oh, see how much we're going to talk about.
Oh, yes.
You know, tell us about your experiences there. I mean, did you go in with a different perspective than you came out?
Yeah, I suppose. Yes, a little bit, but it wasn't. It wasn't transformational. It was just sort of a inside look, and the my perspective on it. That was sort of a the ignition on my perspective of what's going on over there. I was over there in 2003, and so it was early on in this now longest war we've ever been in.
Yeah, we are in a situation. That's what we're going to be talking about. The Breakfast Club. At the Breakfast Club this Saturday, the issue is about that war. Did you know that we've been in Afghanistan now longer than Vietnam? You think there might be some issues we should discuss of where we're going? Is it over? Are we there yet? We'll talk about more with Brian Miller when we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Ernest Hancock, we got Brian Miller in here fighting for, I don't know, truth, justice, and what used to be the American way, I imagine.
Freedom. Always freedom.
Freedom. You know, let's go ahead and go. You're telling us you were deployed in Afghanistan as an A-10 pilot, the Warthog, you know, it's a cool plane. But, you know, it's like death, dying, and destruction for something. And you got to come up with some kind of conclusion on this thing. You know, it's like, should we, I don't know how much you want to go on about the war, but I'm telling you, man, you know, should we have gone? How long should we stay? What was the mission? Should we leave? I mean, give me the war spiel.
Look at the convenient metamorphosis of how they're defining what we're being over there. And they originally said, okay, we're going to go after Al-Qaeda, right? Well, of course, we went there and Al-Qaeda basically doesn't exist there anymore, even according to our own military intelligence. As of a year ago, or less than a year ago, our military intelligence told us there were fewer than 100 Al-Qaeda operatives there. That means with 100,000 American troops, we outnumber each Al-Qaeda operative by more than 1,000 to 1. Think those are good odds? Think we could, maybe the most powerful military in the history of the world could handle that with 1,000 to 1 odds?
Not if you keep making more of them.
Exactly. Well, they squirted out. They went, you know, to Pakistan. What we're doing is destabilizing Pakistan. Everybody says, well, Brian, what are you going to do if you get out of Afghanistan? What about Pakistan? Yeah, the problem is the most stable period in recent Pakistani history was when the Taliban was in control of Afghanistan. That's because it provided a stable neighbor. Pakistan, the government of Pakistan with the nukes, right? That's the big threat, right? Pakistan, probably the most unstable country in the world right now. And for national security, for America's sake, the nukes are the biggest wild card. The stability we seek actually came in the late 1990s up to October 2001. And that's because the Taliban had control of about 85% of Afghanistan, and it was stable. Hey, you don't have to like the Taliban.
Yeah, but man, they cut off the heroin trade. Can't have that.
Well...
Yeah, see what I mean? I mean,
no, I know.
This is going to get complex. I mean, you can't just sugarcoat with this audience. I'm telling you, there are so many other issues. We got the oil pipeline thing that, whatever needs to get the oil Caspian going down the Indian Ocean through Afghanistan. God, who's going to sign the contract? Can I finish? Because this whole thing has been about, you know, just economically and socially engineering other people. And you talk about Pakistan as a nuclear threat, and I'm going, to who? They got missiles, to me, whatever. The threat is just keep screwing around with stuff over there.
No, I know. I'm saying the argument from the usual suspects is that the nukes in Pakistan are the big threat. So, we have to stay in Afghanistan because the nukes in Pakistan. It's a faulty argument.
Do? I mean, are we closing? I mean, Dr. Paul gives you an endorsement. What does that mean? That, you know, we march right in, we march right out and close the bases and we're done and get the Navy on the coastline and Texaco can get their own submarines to guard their own Exxon Valdez, whatever?
You know what? Frankly, I don't care what Afghanis do in their own country. 2,500 years of history prove that the only thing that ever unites Afghanis is the presence of a foreigner. And right now we are the foreigner. So whatever they do in their own country is up to them. We can't force our way of life, can't force Western values, can't force democracy or freedom or whatever on a people that don't want it. The reason that we had a revolution is because it was internal. And evidence of what we can't do over there is just in the fact that in the last couple of months, Karzai threatens to join with the Taliban because he's tired of American involvement. It ends the same way every time with good intentions leading to terrible results.
I don't think there was that many good intentions. I mean, their intention was, we get whatever contract deal we want because we can.
Well, I mean, what's sold?
What is the advocacy? I mean, we have Congress and Brian up there, and we're going to be, advocating for what?
First off, I would have voted to bring the discussion to the floor, like Dr. Paul wanted to do 2 months ago or so. At least talk about this. This is something that the great part of the political spectrum doesn't even want to talk about, apparently. Even our supposed, Democrat down there in the district I'm running in, District 8 in Arizona here, didn't even vote to bring it to the floor of the House to talk about the continuing war in Afghanistan, now the longest war in American history, where we just hit 1,000 American deaths. And, of course, the big question is, for what? To what end? That's the problem. There is no end. We're going to be in Afghanistan for 50 to 100 years, just like we're going to be in Iraq for 50 to 100 years if we don't change policy, maybe longer.
These things don't last out. They just never do because they can't. We're going to go broke.
We're going to keep bases there. There'll be bases there, Ernie. We have bases in Germany.
Heard that. We're going to always have the Berlin Wall. We're always going to have the Soviet Union, the Cold War. We're always going to have. And from my perspective, I'm going, no, we're not. These things never last. Empires crumble. They go to Afghanistan to die is what happens. So, I remember when they started, Bush said, we got a 20-year war on terror. And I'm like, the 7-day war, the 6-year war, the 100-year war, at least they had the courtesy to name those wars after they were over.
After.
So I'm going, here we got the 20-year war, we're sentenced. I mean, my grandkids are going to be fine. I'm like, are you kidding me? So this is, it's all about the love. And I'm telling you, this is not going to sustain itself. It's what's going to happen on the other side. So, we have Brian Miller in Congress, better than what we got. Yeah, probably. But, we're going to keep talking about some details and some issues. If you guys want to get in on this, go ahead, call in 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. Give them what fur. I'll let you. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Congressional 8 Republican candidate in Arizona.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. Where is the love?
The weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive if love is found. Now ask yourself.
Where is the love? Where is the love?
Oh, it's right here. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and another revolutionary, we hope, Mr. Brian Miller, running for Congress in Southern Arizona. And I tell you what he needs. He needs, a spark. I mean, he's running a good campaign. He's getting a lot of attention. They're worried about Brian. But I tell you, it all comes down to when they're worried about you, Tuesday. They, them, those. There are those that just want to be left alone, and there are those that just won't leave you alone. And let me tell you what's going on. The guys who won't leave us alone, they don't want Brian in there.
No.
They don't want no heck no. Because he's going to be advocating for the government leaving you alone. We don't want to leave people alone. We want to do what the heck we want to do. So, what do we do? Now, the field starts clearing out. We start able to focus on different things. Because one, hey, I got something we can do here in Arizona. Wow, man. Ernie might, Arizona? Woo. Ears go up. Time, are we going to do something in Arizona? What are we going to do? Why are we going to do it? Who are we going to help doing it? Because there are a lot of things that we're going to be doing in the next few weeks. There's the libertarian things going on and different stuff like that. But we have, a libertarian, a win is not necessarily votes to us.
It's how many minds can we free? Is Brian going to help us free those minds? Does he deserve our help? He needs it. I guarantee you that. You know, you got these big bad guys out there. Oh, heck no. He's endorsed by Dr. Paul. All the more reason not to help. We need to get rid of him. He's a threat to the empire. Well, that's, you know, that's good. So there's some people, I'm sure, in this audience, the Lovelutionaries, you kind of, you know, you want to throw a little help. I mean, it's always you can send them money or you can get your butt down there and do something. You know, and we got the workshop here. Now, I don't get no campaigns. You can come on the radio, but you don't get to come out here and do, I don't care. But individuals, you can come here and make all the Lovelutionary kind of I want and I don't want, whatever, sign, express yourself all you want. That's what this place is for. Knock yourself out. No campaigns, individuals, First Amendment, expression of their own self. Well, you want to do something for Brian? You want to do some butt whipping? We got the primary going when?
What? August 24th.
August 24th. They keep changing that, too. That's some more Ernie Law stuff. I'll tell you about that later. So they keep moving it back, keep changing that. Now we have August 24th, so we're looking at beginning of June. We got one, two, you know, 2.5, 3 months that we have. Then they start early voting when?
July 27th, I believe.
Okay, so we got 2 months, you know, 2 months to really start, you know, and now's the time. And what is it that you need? I mean, what are you hoping to accomplish? What is it that you see that you could benefit? And what are you, and the people that would support you that come out and say, yeah, let's go, you know, Brian, Dr. Paul's endorsed him. He's military, he's party, he's got, you know, this libertarian, you know, kind of philosophy thing going on. We need to go help Brian because why?
Well, Dr. Paul said he needs about 5 to 10 more people, allies, strong allies in Congress, and he can really start doing some good stuff. I intend to be one of those. I'm not in this for career politics. I'm in this to help pull from the inside the direction of the government, the direction of the country, because it doesn't matter whose regime we're under, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, is going in the wrong direction, sometimes faster, sometimes slower. You know, Ernie, you said something a minute ago. You said that you need to educate, you need to free the minds. That is something that I've been able to do in this campaign, and it's not easy as an outsider campaigning because you have to balance education with appeal. Most candidates, in fact, one of my competitors, one of these goofy Republicans that said, the campaign manager said, well, you can run a campaign two ways. You can either tell people what you want to do or you can tell them what they want to hear and then do what you want to do anyway. Well, because of my background, because of my resume, people have given me a little bit of leeway, the voter has, on issues like Afghanistan. I've taken air out of rooms, 300, 400 Republicans, when I said what we're doing in Afghanistan is wrong. But we have a late primary, and I recognize this from the beginning. I had, you know, 6 to 8 months of being in front of media, being in front of groups, being in front of audiences, where I have been able to shift the dynamic. People are starting to understand that we cannot afford to continue foreign interventionism. We cannot continue to be the world's policeman. We cannot continue to devalue our dollar. You know, you get the eye roll. People like to roll their eyes, like my competitors, when I talk about something like devalued currency, debasing the currency. But the fact of the matter is that's the fundamental problem of basically almost everything that ails us in this country. And so what I have found in this process is that there are actually a lot of Republicans who are just happy that someone is standing up and saying it. And because of my background, being in Afghanistan, being a combat vet, being a fighter pilot, they're saying, okay, we're going to give this guy a little bit of cred and we're going to let him go. And they like what they hear. And they say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Or when I talk about one of those primary ways to solve the problem on the border is not through enforcement only. Look at it through an economic lens. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Once they hear someone say it, as opposed to the stupid, you know, sound bites, build a wall, you know, arrest everybody, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. We have a fundamental problem. The system is the problem. How we let people into the country is a problem. The fact that we think we can promote democracy across the seas, that's a problem. Let's look at the underlying philosophy of here of what we think the government can and cannot do. That's the win. There's a win there in the fact that people are willing to talk about philosophy on what the government can and cannot do.
You know, when you have the comment, they'll say, you know, the first Iron Man, I'll give you an example. the first Iron Man, it goes in, you know, Tony Stark, he's great and wonderful, this, and he builds all these weapon systems and everything to protect America and her interests, okay? And I thought that telling, you know, that they were kind of making fun of that, but what are American interest overseas? I'm or even outside the border, or heck, even inside the border. I'm you know, protecting American interest. I mean, what does that include? Exxon, Halliburton? I mean, I'm not sure what American means. You know, to me, American and protecting American interest is my, you know, individual rights. I mean, you know,
individual liberty.
You know, me. That's what, you know, we forgot that part. I, you know, so define to me when, what do you think they mean when they say, you know, protecting American interest, our way of life? I keep hearing all these phrases to justify them going and bombing and killing people. And I'm going, you know, what is it that they're, what do they mean by that? What do you think they mean by that?
They mean everything you just said, whether it's, well, it's not so much, I don't think it's even some things we might agree on. It's in our interest to have access to energy supplies overseas. But their methodology is always through use of force, through use of aggression, through initiating force. You don't have to do that.
Well, China's not doing it, saving a lot of money. They go, you know what? It's cheaper for us to just, you know, pay for it.
Yeah, you know who owns the largest copper mine in Afghanistan? China.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're going into Africa. I mean, we, you know, it was only a couple of years ago, they did AfricaCom. I mean, you know, that we got a, you know, a military kind of little desk thing dealing with Africa. And I'm going, you know, they're going into, you know, hot spots like Angola or whatever. And it's, you know, so much cheaper. What are we going to do? Occupy them, force them, go, you know, fighting in jungles for whatever. Just open up the checkbook. You know, that's one thing that's interesting. When we went into the Middle East, I remember a few years ago, I had done some math.
What do you mean when we went? What are you talking about? Decades ago, or are you talking
No. I'm talking about, you know, about, I don't know, it was like 05 or something. I had done some math on the price of oil.
Oh, okay.
And it was when the oil went, it shot up, and it's 60, 70. Oh, my goodness. Of course, it went double that. But, you know, they were freaking out. You know, this is, well, we need to be over there so we get access to cheap oil. And I'm going, seriously, this is all subsidized. You know, it's military. I mean, put a 16-incher on the XM Valdez and have it defend its own damn self. You know, why am I over? You know, they're not doing it for IBM. Well, yeah, they probably are. But I mean, you know, it's like subsidized force for industries to be able to do business, because if you don't, it's like economic hitman thing, you know?
Yeah, never mind the war's cost is $1 trillion.
Exactly. So I figured it out. I'm going, if we just didn't have this war, you know, how much would we have saved? Above the cost of each barrel of oil, it was like $137 a barrel we spend, you know, to get cheap oil. And I'm going, it's not about the money, because, I mean, you got to calculate in all kinds of stuff. Military, you know, when they're injured, Veterans Administration, continuing health care. I mean, there's all this other stuff that comes into this. And I'm going, 130-something? I mean, a lot. Let's put it that way. And I'm going, China's got it going on, man. They go, mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot cheaper if you just buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about that. No. It's about who gets the money. It's not, if it was, let's say we were a monarchy. Let's say we're a king. You know, I'm starting to think, you know, in terms of money. You know, how much am I going to make? What's it going to cost me or whatever? That's not how, you know, this government thinks. It's, of course, we're going to go into debt. Of course, they're going to indebt the next generation and my grandkids. And of course they are. They don't care because they get the money. And it's all about who gets it. You know, it's in your favorite people. I mean, Halliburton, KBR, on. That's another thing. Being in the military over there, tell me about this privatization of the military, of our force, this projection of force of America. It's like we got, you know, our own hit squads, you know, Yellow Pages or something. I mean, you know, what's going on?
Well, yes. I you know, I don't know too much in depth other than I've seen the numbers. And by some calculations, there's two contractors for every soldier over there, which is frightening, not only because of the monetary, just the money aspect up front, because it's very expensive, you know, to private meals and all this stuff. But, you know, just the overall mindset of how we're going to operate wars overseas, it's a little frightening.
And robots. I mean, here it comes. artificial intelligence. They already have planes that they're, you know, some 19-year-old kid in Langley is doing a joystick with a Predator, you know, going out there and, you know, bombing everybody. Go, oh, I'm sorry. You know, of course we hit the wedding party. We knew all the bad guys would be there. Now the children are just, you know, bloodstains on the wall. They never felt a thing. Don't worry about it. And I'm going, wow.
Well, it's the threat, you know, and of course, in the fighter pilot community, we're innately against it. We think it's silly. There's probably a time and a place for them, because it would save, theoretically, it'd save American lives, theoretically. But, you know, there are certain things, you know, looking at human history and the history of warfare, I think there has to be a certain cost borne by going to war, and you can't automate everything.
It's like
the computer war games you see in utopian movies where, you know, it's...
It reminds me of a Star Trek episode to where they got to the point it was so clean.
That's what I'm talking about.
That they were having these planets, they would just do like a fake attack.
Right.
Our computer says you have so many casualties, now you just walk into the thing and vaporize in there and they keep going. And Kirk, you know, blew up the machines and he goes, no, we're supposed to be messy.
Yeah.
So you don't fight them, you... Oh.
Right.
So this is... We're trying to say... And they certainly have sanitized it in the media, and they glorify it. It's kind of like the Empire in Britain. You're not a man unless you come back with a limb missing.
Yeah.
You know, this is sick, man. And I'm going, this is, and as a congressman in Congress, being a vet, a fighter pilot, gone to Afghanistan. So, I mean, what is your, in your whole campaign, or certainly if elected Congress, are you going to be an anti-war candidate? Are you, you know, is that center or up front of this, or something else you're focusing on? What is it you're focusing on?
No, I don't define myself as anti-war. I define myself as war when it's justified, when it's morally justified, when it's constitutionally declared, when it's for the purpose of defense, self-defense. Same as a person. You don't get to initiate force on someone.
Okay, let's go on to some of the other issues. I mean, you know, here in Arizona, and you're down in southern Arizona, oh, that's immigration.
Right on the border.
Yeah, this immigration thing, big deal. I mean, we've been going round and round, and Russell Pierce and his bill, and I've been having some fun with that one, because I know what this is. I've known Russell since, I've had him on my radio show half a dozen times. He spoke at the Breakfast Club. We know each other well, and I know his thing. It is always about national ID. This is always national ID. Because if you're going to be checking somebody's papers, comparing their name to what? What list are you going to be comparing it to? Where's that come from? Well, this bill, I mean, you know what? Before we get into it, let me give you your perspective on this. You supported the bill, you didn't. Why, for, against? I mean, give me your immigration spiel, man.
Oh, I'm fine with the bill. It doesn't seem to do any. It doesn't seem to do what all the hype says it's going to do. It doesn't change really the way the cops operate, other than when they determine that someone is here without having entered illegally into the country, then they can put them in the system.
You know, I don't want to get, you know, be in opposition to a genuine opinion. I'm just, are you aware? You know, it turns over applications for hunting licenses, fishing licenses, concealed carry permits, motor vehicle department, and it goes to Janet Napolitano. And this was Russell's argument. He goes, that's not national ID. And I go, why? And he goes, because it prevents any law or municipality or county from preventing the transfer of that data, but it doesn't require it, so it's not national ID. And I go, oh, you're killing me, man. These words are – I just need to know – I give you a good example. Here we have a strong conservative. Everybody's, he's so libertarian conservative. Congressman Jeff Flake, and he votes for the Patriot Act. So I'm just like, you know, I'm going, you know, what do you have to do to be disqualified as a conservative? Okay. This Patriot Act thing, that goes on my list. What's your view on that?
No, I would not have supported the Patriot Act. I mean, it gave government way too much power. I mean, in simple, straightforward terms.
Okay. So here we got on the war. You have, it's time to leave. You know, and we'll have wars, but they got to be declared and be constitutional and, you know, defensive and what I mean. And then we have on immigration. We'll get in more details what
sure.
Your position is on immigration. Patriot Act, that was a bad thing. You know, economics, get the government out of it, and we'll get more detailed on what their proper role should be. So we kind of covered, you're getting an overview of Brian, and now we're going to get into some detail. I mean, we're going to give him a chance to detail stuff, because if you're going to get off your butt and go down there and do something, you need to be advocating and have a champion of what?
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more fight, a little less fun. A little less fight, a little more spark. Close your mouth and open up your heart. And baby, satisfy me. Satisfy me,
baby. Yeah! Satisfy me here on Declare Your Independence. We got Brian Miller running for Congress in Southern Arizona District 8. And, a little less conversation, a little more action, please. And what might that action be? Well, you know, we're going to start getting detail. We got a short segment here. And, you know, in the next hour, we're getting long, drawn out. We'll go issue by issue. But I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, we got like 4 or 5 minutes here. You get a summary and you just give me your one-liner, you know, sound bite. I got the camera on you. You get 10-second thing.
Okay? All right.
Brian, what is your position on the bailouts and the economy? And we're going, Hades and handbaskets. Oh, my goodness. What are you going to do for me? How are you going to fix it? What's your thing?
No, you got to get the government regulation and bailouts out. You got to let the market correct itself. Otherwise, you prolong the aggravation.
Yeah, but people are going to die. They're going to die on the street. They're going to starve. They're going to, you know, fill in the blank poster children for whatever. You know, and you're what? Where's your safety net? What is your safety net?
No, the private business has to compete in a market. Then by distorting it, by giving government, by redistributing wealth from people who aren't involved, you are hurting more people than you're helping.
Okay. Now let's go ahead and talk about immigration. Give me your thing. You're on the border there, your Republican primary. They're going, you know, them damn Mexicans, you know, them damn something. I mean, I'm not even sure what we're fighting here. What is the issue? I mean, what is, you know, they're complaining about, it's always the government that's complaining about more customers. I mean, you know, I never really got that. That's a Jacob Hornberger thing, Future Freedom Foundation. He goes, hey, man, it's always the government complaining about more customers, you know. And I'm going, yeah, you do away with the welfare state. You kind of got problem solved. But, I mean, so what is the real issue that we're dealing with on immigration?
The one thing that we can solve, there, you hit part of it. There's three things that you could do to help solve this problem on the border. One, conservatives won't buy. That is ending the unconstitutional federal drug war. Two, liberals won't buy. That is ending the unconstitutional welfare state. Three, the thing that we can do politically is focus on a market-based legal immigration system. That is the way we have to go.
Okay, now market-based, you mean like a Becerra program?
With temporary worker program, expand that. We have more than 3.5 people trying to get here legally, but the average, what we're letting in, less than 10% of that per year. So obviously there's a huge wait line. So you got to, if there's a demand, make it reflect reality. The market is reality.
You know what we did? And the more you look into it, I was involved in, that's what got me in, you know, 1988. Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act. It was like the New World Order in print. I mean, I'm 20-something years old. I go, holy crap, this is definitely not what they taught us in junior high, okay? And part of that came out, you know, the Uruguay round of the GATT Treaty and then NAFTA and all this kind of stuff, and I saw what was going to happen. They did NAFTA, and you have all this subsidy of our corn industry, Arthur Daniel Midland going, thank you very much, and we'll spend more energy to make energy out of ethanol, whatever, because we make money. And then what happened? You just put out of work an entire generation of farmers in Mexico. What did you think was going to happen? You know, I'm going, what? And I'm supposed to think these are bad people because they set down their tequila and walked across the desert to go get a job to sustain their family? I'm going, these are the bad people? While there are people advocating for a welfare state up here and think that somebody from Montana that's going to be stealing my wealth and redistributing it to them, somehow they're better? They go, no, we don't want these people stealing from you, but these people can. It's okay because they got, you know, their U.S. citizen card. I'm like, ooh, boy, I'm feeling so much better now. So, you know, it's an economic thing. I'm with you, brother, on that. So, you know, it's we can talk about that. Then, you know, the war. I mean, it's not just the wars now. It's in general. I mean, do I really have to care about North and South Korea? I mean, you know, I'm just, am I allowed not to care? And he'll go, oh, foreign policy. When we come back, we'll talk about Israel. The third rail, Israel. We'll see what we have to say about that. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, Brian Miller running for Congress, Southern Arizona. Oh, and then you guys start lining up. 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.